Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim here with Ed, and Abe is a holdover for us this half hour. For the next few minutes anyway, Abraham Hamilton III, and you can hear Abe's show this afternoon at 5 o'clock, 5:05 actually, to be specific, 5:05 Central Time on American Family Radio with the Hamilton Corner. Steve Jordahl's in studio with us. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. Nice to be back in the big studio. So this is the big studio.
Yeah,
well, welcome. It's only because we've had Venus. Some internet troubles.
Right.
As soon as they're corrected, you're going to be right back
right
in
back
Venus.
Right back in Venus.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Back.
Well, we used to have everybody in here every day, but then
14 days?
COVID. Yeah.
Stop the spread, Tim.
No, they've changed that to 14 months.
14 months?
14 months to bend the curve. That's the new... new motto. All right. You wanted Abe to hang around ask him a question about.
Well, yesterday, Attorney General William Barr appointed John Durham as a special counsel to look into the origins of the Russia probe. And what I heard was that that makes it harder for the Democrats, if they should get the White House and the Justice Department, then to kind of shut that whole thing down. What happened?
Yeah, so with the Attorney General appointing John Durham as special counsel, and he just announced the appointment yesterday. The appointment took place several weeks ago. But, again, an incurious media probably didn't let you know about that information. What it does is it insulates the John Durham investigation, and I know some people are saying, John Durham investigation, come on with it, man. But to continue his investigation into the origins of the Russia probe. And so by designating him a special counsel, it basically affords him the same powers that Robert Mueller has, that he's now independent from the immediate apparatus of administration changes and things of that nature, so that no matter what happens, the appointment of John Durham as special counsel requires a different set of law to apply to him, and that it makes it more difficult, as you articulated, for the Biden administration, should they get in or whatever, to stop him from continuing to investigate the origins of the Russia probe.
What we heard the entire time that
Robert Mueller
was in office was that the left was afraid that Trump was going to fire Mueller, and we heard that he could have, but he didn't. So can Biden fire Durham, and would that be what would he suffer if he did?
Yeah, I mean, the ultimate fallout would be political; it wouldn't be any legal or criminal fallout, but it would be political. He would have to face, and this assumes that you have an interested media, but face the media's response and say, hey, why? What do you have to hide? What are you afraid of? Why would you want to stop this lawful investigation that is already underway?
That's
pretty close to being wrapped up. And again, one of the major calculations that are made is how will this play out politically because of the media. But to simply put, by making John Durham a special counsel, his being canned would be a clear demonstration of Biden's objection to the investigation as a lone standing issue. So he would not be able to sweep it into saying this is nothing more than administration change. We want our guys in that we trust, as opposed to the last guy's in.
And according to what we've learned so far, Biden himself is neck deep in this.
He is neck deep because he has the suggestion of the Logan Act being raised in a White House meeting when the Russian collusion investigation took a particular turn, when General Flynn was presented as being investigated. Joe Biden specifically was involved in that allegation. So you literally have an investigation that could turn the attention on the person who wants to be the next president of the United States.
Wow.
Thank you, Abe. Appreciate it. Look forward to your show this afternoon, brother.
You're welcome. And when you guys catch Bigfoot, please let me know.
Okay. Well, we're pursuing him. I guarantee you.
Ed's we're on
going,
it.
Ed's going to Area 51 tomorrow. See if can run him down out there. Go ahead. What are you going
to
say, Ed?
No, I was trying to knit those things together and come up with something snappy, but
You're not there yet?
I'm not there yet.
Okay. Get back with me.
I'm going to think about something. Think that through.
Okay. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Our email address is comments@afr.net. comments@afr.net. Our website is afr.net. Steve Jordahl is with us. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano. Steve?
I wanted to bring up this. We may have mentioned it in passing yesterday, but in England, the court there has ruled that children under 16 years of age aren't mature enough to consent to a medical treatment which would start their transition, gender transition, if they think that they're transgender. So the court ruled that if you're, because the National Health Service over there is getting referrals of kids as young as 11.
Right.
That because they want to start these hormone blockers. Basically, it stops them from having puberty and it stops them from maturing. And the court says, you know, 11, a 12-year-old, they can't know. And even a 14 and a 15-year-old don't probably understand the long-term consequences. By law over there, a 16-year-old is able to make their own medical decisions, although they even sounded at that point like they weren't that happy about it, but they couldn't do a whole lot about it at 16.
Yeah, that's actually a tremendous ruling in favor of sanity over in the UK, because I was actually kind of surprised that they even said about 14 and 15-year-olds, they can't make those kinds of decisions. I look back at my own life, and I'm not talking about schoolwork, did well in school, but just in terms of a lack of wisdom. I mean, I was an idiot. I mean, I just right. say, in terms, I would never have allowed myself, looking back, I'm 62, looking back at my 15-year-old self, I would never allow me to make any serious decision.
Why God gave you parents, right?
That is absolutely right. So the fact that this is so sad, Steve, that there are medical professionals, and of course the sexual revolution evangelists that are always pushing against God's laws, it is so sad to think of these children, even sometimes aided and abetted by their parents, taking these puberty blockers. It does tremendous physical damage to their bodies, a lot of which is irreversible. It can harm the growth of their bones, let alone, you know, their ability to procreate later on. This is very, very sad, and it is it's high time somebody put a stop to it, and it looks like that's happened in the UK.
One of the defendants in the case that brought this ruling, is her name is Kira Bell, and I just want to read you from the BBC's coverage. She said, at 16, she became one of thousands of girls, some as young as 10 or 11, referred to the Tavistock and Portman Trust, which is the National Health, it's their hospital, their agency that does this. After 3 one-hour appointments, that's all she had was 3 hours of talking to somebody. She was prescribed puberty blockers, and before she was put on testosterone. When I was 20, she said she had a double mastectomy. She believed the treatment would help her achieve happiness. Ms. Bell, who began detransitioning last year, said, it was heartbreaking to realize I'd gone down the wrong path. Tim, where have we heard that before?
Yeah, you tell me.
Well, it just so happens that AFA has a documentary out called In His Image.
Yes, absolutely.
That where we talked to a young lady that
Laura Perry,
who has the same story. She thought it would make her happy if she transitioned to become a man. And I remember her talking. I listened to a talk she gave at my church here a couple weeks ago, where she said, you know, we kept hearing from everybody in my support group how happy and how positive they were, but they were just depressed. The look on their face was just horror. This is not an appropriate diagnosis or appropriate treatment.
Well, and the thing is, it's different than coming to the conclusion that my years of drinking alcohol or doing drugs, I now realize this is not making me happy, so I'm going, I'm going to go and try to break my habit, and I'm going to undergo therapy or whatever I have to do, get clean, and then I can live a normal life. Well, you can do that with things like drugs. You can't completely reverse the damage you've done when you've taken all these medications to transition, quote unquote, transition from male to female or vice versa, because a lot of this is irreversible. And like you're talking about this, Ms. Bell over in the UK, These, for example, for young ladies who want to, they think they can transition and become men, their voice is permanently lowered. Mm-hmm. They still, even when they stop with the testosterone, it doesn't matter. Their body still continues to produce beards. I mean, it is incredibly sad, and I hope and pray that if God will spare our nation and Western civilization by sending revival, that we will look back at this with horror. This 50, 60, 70-year period of time where the sexual revolution has run rampant, and look back and say, how did scientists and medical professionals ever allow this? Because it's a horror show. Every time one of these young people wants to reverse
the course. Medication, not to mention the gender mutilation surgery that
many people have. That's right.
Yeah, this is a big issue out there for the Hollywood types and the cultural left in this country and abroad, as we see. But a great ruling there by the UK. Is that akin to our Supreme Court?
No, the High Court there, kind of like California's Superior Court is their lowest court. This is the third highest court in the land.
It's so kind of surprising that they would rule anything other than pro-LGBTQ way, that they're saying parents can't give their kids, their minor kids, hormones.
They don't say that parents can't. They said that the kids themselves cannot make that determination.
I believe that the parents
still could come in and advocate for them, but most parents won't.
No. That'd be minuscule number that would do something like that. But all right, next story, Steve.
Well, we have been hearing lately from the Project Veritas and James O'Keefe. He has been busy. He is uncovering. He's been listening into conference calls at CNN with Jeff Zucker, who's the president there. And surprise, surprise, Jeff doesn't like President Trump very much. And he's directed his network, CNN, to kind of put a negative spin on their coverage of the president.
So are we going to hear some of this?
I have one.
Okay. What's going on here, just to be clear, is I don't know how he got on this, but James O'Keefe, he has his ways, is listening in on editorial meetings by CNN's top guy and other staff people responsible for putting together stories.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
And giving direction to the network.
So he started listening in. How long had he been listening into these meetings?
Well, he's been there for a while.
Months. I think it was a couple of months.
Basically, he's spying on them to see what they're saying.
He's going back to conference calls that happened early October, at least.
Okay. So. All right.
But he was James O'Keefe was allowed to do this by an insider, so he didn't break any laws. Right.
All right. What are we about to hear now?
Well, this is not Zucker, I don't believe, but we're going to hear one of CNN's editors, who on a 9 a.m. producer's call, saying that CNN cannot give President Trump a platform and let him talk about.
This
not
is from October.
No, this is actually from post-election because they're talking about the platform of him saying, I didn't lose the election. Let's listen to Cut 7.
CNN says on Jeff Zucker's 9 a.m. editorial conference call how they, the Democratic Party, powerful interest groups, may determine how CNN will cover Trump not conceding the presidential election.
I just want to underscore something that Michael said earlier about the transition and Trump, because I've been talking to a lot of people this morning on both sides, that we have to be, news organizations have to be very careful and very responsible about not giving Trump too much of a platform on his not conceding.
Yep. Agreed.
There you go. Don't let him talk about not conceding. Don't let him talk about the evidence that's out there. We don't want to hear it.
Was that the CNN orchestra in the background? What was that?
Project Veritas orchestra.
Oh, okay.
That was James O'Keefe was the person you heard at the beginning of that clip.
Ed and I've talked about this before. CNN was a well-respected news organization for a couple of decades there. Ted Turner started it. You remember that name? A blast from the past.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they were the premier news organization, television-wise, in the world. They were the only game in town for a long time. And how they built their reputation back in the day was two things. They had balanced political discussions. I remember my dad appeared on Crossfire.
I loved that show.
Crossfire. Yeah. Pat Buchanan and a guy on the left.
Michael Kinsley.
Yeah, but they would duke it out. And then they had pretty fair news coverage when they covered stories. They would, you know, get both sides. And then, but their forte, in my opinion, was covering live news events.
They were everywhere.
Yeah, here in the U.S. and internationally.
I remember 1990, well, it would have been 1991, that the first Gulf War when we went in. And they had somebody in Baghdad. In Iraq, the night that we started bombing, and I remember watching in just absolute fascination that I am watching war as it happens.
Yeah, it was mesmerizing when they covered
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
But CNN would have been around the world on all kind of stories like that, you know, that they would bring it to you live. And so that's, and then that something happened, I don't know, a few years ago. I don't know when.
2016, perhaps?
Well, 2016 for sure, where they just said, you know, we're gonna ditch all this live news coverage stuff and fair political discussion, and we're going to join Google, who CEO said we can't let Trump win again. Back 4 years ago, remember that?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's an exact quote from the Google guy, but it reflected what he
said it will not happen again,
right?
To his staff,
yeah.
Some of his top.
We have to do what we can to prevent it from happening again.
He said that in 16,
the day after the election, they were weeping.
The Google top guy did. So CNN decided, you know, we're going to be a part of the resistance, and our reputation, we'll just have to put it at risk. Our reputation for being an honest news broker, so. It doesn't surprise me at all what we just heard at one of their staff editorial meetings. A woman on there, one of the ladies, says, "We gotta not give him any kind of a platform to air his grievances on the election results." You know what always amazes me is that for the left and the news, many in the news media, and Facebook and YouTube—not Facebook and YouTube, but Facebook and Twitter did this with the Hunter Biden story, and that is, I'm thinking to myself, if something is crazy and or insane and or untruthful on its face, as you claim it is, for the reasons you won't let it appear on your platform or your television network, then why don't you let the other side, in this case, the right, make fools of themselves? What are you afraid of? For example, with what she just said right there, that CNN lady, I would say if the president of the United States wants to say something about election fraud or why don't you just let him say it? He's the president of the United States, and then people can make up their own minds whether he's being ridiculous or not. I think the reason they make these editorial decisions not to cover the president on something he might say or to censor it or downplay it is precisely because they do know that if he or some conservatives are able to get before an audience, they can make a case for the reasonability of what they're saying. And they're worried that that could convince a lot of people in the middle or on the left to consider what people on the right are saying.
You know, you would think
does that make sense?
It does. Go ahead, and I'll then I'll.
I was just going to say, you would think that with the story being that there is question about the integrity of a presidential election in America, the heartbeat of freedom. That would be a story that they should run down with vigor. And even if it's not true, or even if they think it's not true, prove it's not true. For, you know, they had this, when it was the Russia probe, they talked about the unverified dossier for years. Mm-hmm. Well, verify it. That's what you do.
Right, right. No, they didn't want to verify it.
Well,
they wanted to keep
they,
using it.
They talked about the quote-unquote Russia collusion story for years because that fit their narrative.
Right.
They don't want to talk about potential fraud in the 2020 election because that doesn't fit their narrative. And even more than that, if you want Republicans in these various states who are charged with certifying the election, because most of these swing states have Republican legislatures, then you want to make sure the pressure is on them to certify. Mm-hmm. What you don't want these Republicans doing is having cover from a discussion from November 4th on through December 14th about there being potential fraud. If you're talking about that story on CNN and every other media outlet, then these Republicans in these states will go, well, wait a second, there may be fraud here. And so we're going to take a closer look at this election. Instead, what you want is nobody talking about fraud so that these Republicans right. go, I'm not bringing that up and try to overthrow this election or change it because they'll have my head on a pike.
Yep.
Well, what they do in totalitarian states is they, communist China or even Saudi Arabia, for example, about totalitarian in Saudi Arabia, I mean an Islamic-ruled kingdom, and other places, and this is down through history. You control the messaging that goes out to the people in your country to affect how they think intentionally or don't think, and you can do it two ways. You can lie about what's said to change, or you can mislead people or misrepresent. In the case of President Trump, they misrepresent what he says, oftentimes knowing he didn't mean something, but they say, oh, like Charlottesville, he said there were great Nazis out there.
Right.
Huh? That's what that narrative turned into. He didn't say anything of the like, but that's what the left turned it into. Okay, so you can do that. Or I think when there's evidence against your side, like with the Hunter Biden laptop story, what you do is absolutely just ignore it, as Ed says. Just ignore it altogether. Don't even talk about it at all.
Yeah.
Because to talk about it at all is to say, well, let's hear, well, what does the other side say about these claims? Which would be the natural traditional way of news deciphering or gathering. So what you got going on, and it's not necessarily official by government like in totalitarian states, but it's official in the sense that it's complete and utter groupthink
yep.
by the left-wing media and the social media giants. And, man, it's you're talking about collusion. It's collusion of ideology. And they are out to punish President Trump and conservatives and Christians. They, as I've mentioned before, they think we are a threat to what they want to accomplish, and they're right, but they also think that we are subhuman.
Yeah, the yeah. evil. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't believe in evil, but anyway, they believe in their worldview that it's evil being we are the personification right. of that because. Well, many reasons, but namely our belief in God and absolute moral values. And the Constitution, you might throw that in there as well, as American patriots. They despise that ideology. They think that should be subservient to a more secular globalism that's out there. Thank you, folks, for listening to AFR today. And Steve, appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Ed?
Absolutely.
Thanks to Abe and Brent and Fred. And David Barton. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.